Hey, what's going on, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am Vlad Sedler. I'm at RotoGut on X and everywhere else, and I'm with my man Jason Anthony here, Boom 62, on a Friday night, Clayton Kershaw's last home start ever.
I am watching that game, and man, Dodger Stadium is lit up for that. Pretty exciting. A lot of nostalgia, even being a Giants fan, watching Kershaw go out there and do that. Just a giant killer. But man, week 26 of 27, we are almost to the finish line, Vlad. How are you doing in your leagues?
You know, I want to not jinx myself. I've kind of caught steam in a couple of leagues. A couple of my main events that had been hovering in the middle for most of the season, and just have the right mix of players. Just random things, like, you know, you pick up a little Royce Lewis and get a whole bunch of stolen bases, and just, you know, just good timing on a lot of things. And so the issue, of course, with that is it's a huge swing as far as the potential there, right? I could, you know, maybe second place is the max in one league, but then fifth, you know, out of the money. Another one, I could be anywhere from first to third. And so, yeah, I mean, just, you know, kind of big swings there. OCs, I'm, you know, back and forth between first and second in some. DCs, I'm like second in a whole bunch. There's nothing exciting, like out of this world, fighting for, you know, guild style, three main events in the mix, or some of the things I'm seeing. Like, if you're at the top of the OC board, there's really nothing more exciting, the swing of the day to day. So I'm enjoying myself, but I'm kind of more living vicariously through a lot of our friends that are competing for a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, at the risk of the guilds correcting us, I think he's got four mains in first place. Pretty incredible run he's on. Shout out to Andrew Geller, just incredible fantasy player. It's better for you, I guess, than being in a bunch of seventh, eighth places, right? When you don't have a sweat, you know, it's nice to have at least a sweat for second, third, you know, cashing. You know, we've all been there where there's just kind of really nothing to play for the last week. So I guess it's better than the alternative, right?
Yeah, it's true. And as we've realized, specifically in the NFBC, I mean, it's really getting harder and more competitive every year. And we're going to talk a lot today about some of the big surprises this year. And, you know, at some point, I just remember middle of the season, just kind of throwing my hands up on things. Like, you know, I'm actually looking, I already kind of started to put together sort of my final gut feelings piece that's going to look at, you know, my targets preseason, you know, VDP projections and things like that. On the plus side, just looking at where I had the overall league environment, I mean, it's trending to be exactly where I have it, or at least I should be the closest. And that's meaning everything, all, like, you know, runs, homers, everything, like, in between the last two seasons is exactly kind of where I had it. So that's good. On, you know, the other side, all my late round targets, literally all these guys, from Jung-Hoo Lee to Jonathan India to, you know, everyone except for the late round catchers, have just stunk this year. And, you know, even if you hit on the early picks, you still kind of want the good supporting cast. Hey, listen, pitching's good, this and that, but it was just such a sort of huge miss. And then you add on top of that a Seiya Suzuki second half just disaster. You know, two home runs and 0.057 ISO since the All-Star break. And unfortunately, that team has just fallen apart, the Cubs. So it's been an absolute wild and humbling baseball season. So that's the one thing I'll say to the people that are, you know, might be in some big money. And if you already got a lot of, what do you call it, hubris, or not hubris, but just like, you got that cockiness and then you win a whole bunch of stuff, chances are you're going to probably be a little bit more cocky next year. And I just warn everyone to be humble. And that's not just bitter Vlad talking. That's just the truth from experience.
It's the only thing worse is golf, I think, as far as humbling. But fantasy baseball, yeah, you think you know it, and then it flips you on your head. You know, as far as the projection goes, you know, that's over half the battle, is knowing what environment you're going to be in to what you're projecting to. So, 2 years in a row, that's really impressive with the VDPs and the projections, and, you know, it really puts you a leg up on most of the projections. And, you know, I guess one thing I guess could say is at least you're missing on late guys, not early guys, because you always can replace those guys with fab. You obviously want that, you know, that 17th rounder that's turns into a fifth rounder, but you can see you're having some success even without hitting on those late guys. So kudos to you on that.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a whole another thing. And I'm probably not going to do it next year, to be honest. I'm not, at least not the way that I've done it in the past, because putting in those the man hours is where some of the success has come from. But it's not like humanly stable, right? Like, you start off with a model, and then every day you're tweaking throughout the preseason, plus, you know, a whole mess of rankings and this and that. It's just not feasible or sustainable. And, you know, honestly, to what end? And not to discredit anything I'm doing, but at the end of the day, all these projection systems are pretty solid. Like, nobody's going to be able to predict for you that Jordan Alvarez is going to be out, or, you know, Austin Riley, or, you know, Spencer Strider is going to absolutely stink, and all the crazy things that have happened this year. So they're, you know, you're talking about like millimeters when you're comparing the accuracy of projection systems.
Yeah, I mean, these projection systems that are out there public for us to look at and use are pretty accurate already. So it's like, do you want to recreate the wheel, or do you want to find areas to kind of dive into those to kind of find the value? Because doing your own projections, man, I've done it. It's time consuming. And, you know, what? Like, I guess what's the ultimate payoff? Unless you're going to win every league you do because you have some secret formula with the projections. Diana doesn't seem worth it. I mean, I remember talking to Phil this year, Phil Dussault, and he said basically his projections are worse than the aggregate projections. So his model's not working that, where he's having his successes in the FAB aspect, not mm-hmm. necessarily in the draft season. So it is interesting where you can get a leg up, because you said it when we started, the field is so good. Every one of these players is just top notch, and it's hard to win. It's becoming harder every year. These Excel wizards, the data miners, not to mention just the straight baseball guys. There's a mix of them all, and they're all so good. And it's an honor to play and compete against them. It's an honor to have success against them, but man, it's hard.
Yeah. And you know, another element of that is I'm thinking back to the previous season where three of my biggest standouts, really the guys I was doing victory laps with from my projections in 2024, were really big hits. I mean, it was Ronaldo Lopez, Garrett Crochet, and Jose Caballero. And honestly, I mean, what really are the projections? It's just me increasing plate appearances or innings, and, you know, just getting lucky. These guys stayed healthy. They converted and into starting roles, and they had, you know, good underlying numbers, and just kind of going against the grain and beating the odds. And then on the flip side this year, like, I wasn't anywhere close to Geraldo Perdomo. I know, you know, perhaps some people were into Perdomo and, you know, and made him a big target this year, but I don't know. I had no, there's nothing in the profile that had me seeing this coming. Absolutely. So this will continue to be baffling, this whole world of fantasy baseball, and just outliers galore every single year. And I guess that's, you know, really just part of the fun.
Yeah, and the key for next year now, as in every year, is not overreact to everything. Because just use Juan Soto having 33 stolen bases, a little sneak peek at our surprises. You cannot write in 20 stolen bases for him next year. I mean, it's an outlier, but what can you write in? So just don't overreact to what the stats were this year, thinking that you're going to get, you know, 60 home runs from Cal Raleigh next year just because he did it this year.
Yeah, exactly. And there obviously is a lot of, you know, some regression built in. Like, you can almost already see in advance next year's Soto projections are going to be similar, right? They're going to be upper 30s homers. Maybe you'll have an outlier somewhere in the early 40s, but probably not. And then you're going to see those stolen bases pulled back, kind of like we saw with Ohtani. You know, he went 50-50 last year, and all the writing on the wall for the preseason was that, hey, he wasn't going to steal that many bases. And I think projection systems mostly had him in the 30s. I think I had him for 25, and he's not at 20 yet. On the flip side, he was a massive outlier in the runs. I mean, he's almost at 140, where maybe I had 115 and others were sort of in that ballpark, the high hundreds. And so those little, you know, those little things are they're impossible, but at the end of the day, they all combine those five categories into like a single dollar value. And that really encompasses each player's value.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and when you're doing projections, you can never project for more than 110, you know, on those counting stats. I mean, Pete Alonso with 133 RBIs this year, you can't project that in your projections. You can't do the 95th, 98th percentile outcome. So you're always going to have those extreme outliers when it comes to that.
Does he really have, or is that Schwarber?
I think it's Alonso. Let me. This is great podcasting, but I thought I saw.
He's got a lot. It's 121, yeah. But yeah, it's. I mean, he'll end up at 133. That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, just amazing. Another RBI today, so 122. Mm. Yeah, he'll end up at 130. But you know, he was kind of fate falling down the draft boards. I think the guilds got him in every draft in the fourth round, and that's why he's having a lot of success, amongst other reasons.
Yeah. Now Alonso's been absolutely incredible, and listen, it's going to be another 40 home run season. He's been kind of slowly climbing there. It's been sort of progressive, but these are some of the players that we're going to talk about. But we're going to jump into some Fab and streamers for the final week of the season. Before we do that, here's kind of our gist of this episode today. Is we want to just kind of talk about what a crazy season it's been, and some of these massive outliers and how we might be looking at some of these players next season. But you know, in honor of all the stuff going with late night talk shows these days, we're going to do it David Letterman style top 10, going backwards. So yeah, we'll alternate some of the top 10 biggest surprises, but just, I mean, things that I guess maybe don't crack the top 10 that are interesting. Like what stands out to you, some players this year?
Well, you know, the jackrabbit, Chandler Simpson coming up and doing what we thought he would, a good batting average, no power, 42 steals and 413 plate appearances. That's a pretty good pace for next year. And, you know, decent runs, plus in batting average, super plus in stolen bases, but just a torpedo in power and RBIs, and a really hard guy to kind of construct a roster around. And man, he's going to have some helium next year. He is today's Billy Hamilton at his peak. Mm-hmm. Where do you think he falls in next year, draft wise? Just top ahead.
It's a good question. When we put him in here, I hadn't really thought about it. I mean, I figured he's going top, you know, five rounds, something like that. But because people are going to want to construct around it. Unfortunately, that could be a little dangerous, but we haven't seen that since, you're right, the Billy Hamilton, Ben Revere days. I mean, you know, we haven't had a massive rabbit like this before, and it could end up backfiring, or it can end up sort of plugging in perfectly, but then the hitting and the power has to go really well.
Yeah, I mean, the Rays liked him enough to send him down back to AAA this year. It's a little scary to, you know, use a top four or five round pick on a guy like that.
Yeah. So that's definitely interesting, especially the fact that he's hitting over 300 and no bombs. So just 42 stolen bases. I'm sure he'll hit a bomb or two. We'll project him for the model said, you know, bing, 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 1.4 home runs for next season. James Wood, tale of two halves. It really is something. Those that drafted him in whatever third, fourth round, he had even started to slip a little bit and main event season, but man, what a complete difference before and after the All-Star break. One of the biggest fall offs we've seen. So of course these teams play more games in before the All-Star break. It's less of a season after it, but I mean the difference is huge. It's a, you know, 278 versus 218 on the batting average. Strikeout rate 27% beforehand, reasonable, 40% after the break. Home runs 24-3. So James Wood, I wonder what you think about him for next season.
You know, I don't see him dipping much just because the pedigree, the age, the upside. You got to believe he's playing injured. That K rate was always the biggest concern, as well as the ground ball rate. Really just broke out in the first half. Baseball's hard, and these guys play through injuries, so it'll be interesting what comes out in the offseason. But 218 and a 40% K rate, that does not sound right for that kind of player. So I'm interested next year. I really am. You know, these guys just figure it out, and the growth is not linear.
Yeah, I mean, if Jeff Zimmerman hasn't if he comes back from being canceled, I would love to see his report of the injured players that he does every year. Like, these guys have been playing hurt.
Yeah, another guy playing hurt, Ellie De La Cruz, first half stats, amazing. We have 18 homers, 72 runs, 63 RBIs, 25 stolen bases, batting 284. Cut his strikeout rate down to 25%. Second half, one homer, 19 RBIs, 27 runs, 10 stolen bases, batting 225. That, my goodness, talk about torpedoing a team that was flying in the first half. That's an incredible drop. So, you know, you've got to believe, you know, they're in the playoff chain, the run. He's still playing, but he's playing through something. So he's someone I'm very interested in next year because he seems like he's starting to figure it out with the swing and miss.
You're talking about Ellie, right?
Yes, Ellie De La Cruz.
Yeah. Yeah. So at the end of the day, I mean, you know, granted, two home runs, right, in the last 3 months or something, which is just insane. And they're just, again, a player most likely dealing with something. But we've seen for a long, prolonged stretch the floor that people were concerned about when they were drafting him in the first round. It was the biggest argument against Ellie De La Cruz. Of course, the massive stolen base total, we figured would regress a bit. But yeah, I mean, he's not at 20 homers yet. 35 stolen bases is about half of what he had last season. And then, you know, listen, I'm just going to get over 100 runs. And he's still a second-round value. So, I mean, I don't see why Ellie isn't going to go again in the first round, right? He's a first-rounder again.
Yeah, I mean, he was a complete fade for me this year where he was going. But seeing the K rate drop from 31.3 to 26 really is piquing my interest with that stolen base, the power, and seeing the RBIs up there in the mid-80s. That was another concern as far as his run production. So, yeah, I believe he'll be firmly in the first round, but probably more towards the middle back of it than the front of it.
You know, another thing, you know, one thing that I hadn't, that I didn't put on the top 10 that I missed, but it's the Josh Naylor, 27 stolen bases. Like, that's insane.
What does he have? 25 of them with Seattle since he got traded.
Yeah.
He runs every day.
He does. It's crazy. They have a formula. They have something.
Softball first baseman, Josh Naylor with the wheels.
Incredible. Colson Montgomery, the rookie, 18 homers since the All-Star break. That's top five in baseball. That's only in 52 games. Playing on the White Sox, that they have some interesting players. They're not, you know, the dead in the water, you know, bottom rung team. I mean, they are kind of record wise in the American League, of course. But I mean, they're no Rockies. Rockies are, you know, the Rockies could still lose 120 baseball games this year.
You said the paste eaters wrong.
The Pacers.
Yeah, the Rockies are a special kind of bad. But I was talking to my buddy this morning about that, actually. The Marlins and the White Sox are actually pretty interesting moving forward. And I know the White Sox especially have some arms coming up, Noah Schultz to be one of them. I don't believe they're going to be bottom into the league for much longer. But yeah, Colson Montgomery batting 200 in AAA comes up and just starts tearing the cover off the ball in the majors. I don't believe any fantasy player saw that coming, but there's a lot of people benefiting from his power.
Did you hear about the thing with the Rangers, like the team chemistry, how bad it is? Like, we kind of already talked about like Jonah Heim's sort of body language and everything as a catcher. But like the latest report I heard, I don't know if it's confirmed, but it was basically like Marcus Semien like tries to get the team together to do stuff like outside of the game, and like nobody shows up. Like a couple of guys show up, so these guys are dead in the water. I mean, they've been, if you look at a team, like, man, everybody has been battered and bruised pretty much all season long.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a little clickbait coming out on September 19th.
Yeah,
that Rangers team has had some bad juju behind it, other than the Jacob DeGrom comeback, which has been fun to watch. Where are you on Wyatt Langford moving forward? Talk about everybody's darling this year and 2020 season, you know, not terrible, but really, really underproduced what everybody thought he was going to do.
Yeah, they've got some things to fix over there. I think team context does have a lot to do with it. Like when you have guys like Adolis Garcia, Marcus Semien getting hurt, Corey Seager, of course, that happened later in the year. And then Wyatt Langford was hurt earlier in the year himself. And it was, you know, I mean, he's still young, doesn't have a lot of, I mean, he doesn't have all that much baseball experience. And a lot of what we were going on, especially when people were pushing him up in the second round, was that amazing September that he had in 2024. So he'll probably get a little helium, but there really is so much to be said about, you know, proper team context, right? Because if you look at a team like the Seattle Mariners, where it was preseason, stay away from the hitters, really. You could take Julio at the end of the first, but the rest of these guys aren't great values because of the park, blah, blah, blah. And guess what? I mean, doesn't matter at the park. Those guys are just all together, just smashing. Everybody, yeah, you know, feeds off each other and it's just working.
Jorge Polanco with a career year when everybody had written him off as far as he was done.
Not me. sorry.
Good small for lapse. You. A little victory lap.
Small lapse.
You know, and now you have these young starting pitcher studs that have come up without the huge, huge pedigree. Still top prospects, but the guys have just been dealing. Cade Horton, Andrew Abbott, Quinn Priester, who I actually had a couple 50th round shares in the DC season. Speaking of some victory laps, I wish it would help me more in my rankings, but it's nice to say that. You know, former top prospect from Pittsburgh that kind of got handed to Boston and then traded to Milwaukee, and all of a sudden Milwaukee is the new magic pitching juice team because anybody they touch turns to gold. Cade Horton with the best ERA since the All-Star break. It's a lot of good pitchers to be on the top of that list.
Yeah, I mean, just in general, that Milwaukee team is something, and that pitching staff. I mean, even a guy like Jose Quintana there, just getting mad run support. But you think about the guys they have, they can, you know, Logan Henderson, right? I mean, he's on the 60-day DL or whatever, done for the year, I think, in the minors, elbow inflammation. Hopefully he'll be okay. Mizorowski, obviously, Brandon Woodruff coming back in full effect, Freddy Peralta, one of the best pitchers in baseball. And then, man, what was that? Robert Gasser is yep, you know, on the way back. Remember, he was a stud too.
Mm-hmm. Report just came out from the manager that Mizorowski's moving to the bullpen for the rest of the year. Oh. Said he's not mentally in a good place to start, but they see him as a starter long-term. What do you think that does to his draft value next year? And obviously this is playoff dependent, how he performs, but pitching out of the bullpen should temper his draft value moving into the 2026. I'm fascinated to see what kind of the minds, the ADP kind of settles in on him on the early drafts, because there's a lot of upside, a lot of risk, a lot of downside too.
Isn't it at all possible, like just based on his profile and some of his history in the minors, like that maybe he won't be a starter? Or do you just have to just let him find his way to be back to being a starter? But he's a high walk rate guy, super, you know, high velocity. Like maybe he's not meant to start.
Well, I read an article. That was an interview for Mizorowski once he got up to the majors, and he said something clicked. He had some data shown to him about how unhittable his fastball is, and that helped his walk rate tremendously. When he first got to the majors and he just was attacking hitters, you know, he had that little blip and just has not been the same since that. So he's probably wearing down arm wise. Guy, that body type throwing 101, that's obviously not going to last. And he is pretty maddening to watch because his stuff's electric, but there's a lot of non-competitive pitches that just, you know, kind of torpedo his outing. So he's going to need to throw a lot more strikes to be in a successful starter, but I don't think you can put that kind of arm in the bullpen, you know, kind of similar to Mason Miller. The Padres did not trade for him to be their ace setup man next year. You got to believe he's going to be in the rotation moving into 26 as well.
Oh, I forgot about that. Mason Miller in the rotation, huh?
Well, I mean, they got Robert Suarez, who's pretty good. And they're using Mason Miller, leveraging him, but what they gave up to get him, that's not for an eighth inning arm.
It's a good point, because my gut feelings was basically writing about all the busted closers and just the closer situation, and my thought was, well, see, Suarez's contract isn't over and he's doing a good job there, but if Miller is the closer, he'd be the number one overall. So that just might be misinformation, because I did forget about that little piece. So I don't know if I heard that somewhere, if that was, I heard it from you, which is something that I think could come to fruition because it makes a lot of sense.
I think it was some people, prospect guys talking after the trade, was basically there's no chance that they're giving up the number three prospect in all of baseball for an eighth inning arm. This is a long-term play from their mad scientist GM.
That makes sense. That makes sense. All right. Well, let's do our let's do our top 10. Number 10, it's the craziest stat lines, biggest surprises of the 2025 season. And this one's kind of more general, but it's just about the Orioles and how they just started crumbling from day one. And everything from, they decided to move the wall in Baltimore there. And they were immediately one of the worst pitching staffs in the league. And, you know, bullpen, Felix Bautista, you know, Gunnar Henderson starting off hurt to start the year. Adley Rutschman with an absolute, disaster choke job. Jordan Westberg missing most of the season, trading away Ramon Laureano. Coby Mayo not coming to fruition, trading away Ryan O'Hearn. I guess, Mullins is gone too. It was a huge fire sale, but, Jackson Holliday has been solid, is pretty close to a 2020 season. But still, you're talking about a guy that's been leading off for most of the season, and he's not even at the on the cusp of 70 runs scored. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. If there's an award for most incompetent GM in the world, I think it's Elias is his last name, but how he's ran those prospects, developed that team, the pitchers he signed, just absolutely. If you look up and down that roster, Coby Mayo, Heston Kerstad, Colton Cowser, they got and all of a sudden now Dylan Beavers is up, Jeremiah Jackson. They have so many of these good young prospects, Rutschman, Basayo. And then they start the season signing Sugano and Charlie Morton to solidify the rotation after losing Corbin Burns. What did you think was going to happen? Kyle Bradish is out. Borderline, like, I'm smarter than everybody else, but I'm actually dumber. I'm frustrated because my one of my really good friends is good friends with Brandon Hyde, who's got let go by the Orioles and was really put in a position to fail, in my opinion. So I'm fascinated to see if he can get another job, maybe with my Giants. Talk that into the universe.
Yeah, that makes sense. They had a really good Brandon there before, not as a manager, but the great legendary Brandon Belt.
I thought you were gonna go with Crawford. You had to go the captain on the belt.
Huh? Yes, the captain.
The Brandons.
Yes, yes. So yeah, real disaster there. All right, give us number nine.
Number nine, the ratio squashers: Dylan Cease, Zach Gallen, Sandy Alcantara, and Tyler Bibee. Bibee's one of the most maddening pitchers. He looked good for four innings and then just blow up. But yeah, if you have one of these guys on your roster, ERA and walks and WHIP, you're having a hard time competing in ratios.
So yeah, and so Bibee, he was just one of my guys. Like, I was just so into Tanner Bibee, especially he started moving up, and I mean up until like in the 60s, like fourth, fifth round. By the time we got to the main events, had a really fight for him, and he's been picking it up lately. So over the last couple of weeks, he's been kind of an absolute stud, and actually had a good start Friday. By the way, we are recording on Friday, September the 19th, on Kershaw's last start. But Dylan Cease, so this is the one I remember. You know, like sometimes we have like a mean streak in us in fantasy, or like when we just like study so much, or when we, our ego's high, we think we know so much. I remember seeing, me putting Dylan Cease way below his ADP in my rankings, and then like kind of scoffing to myself every time somebody drafted him, like in the third round or whatever. I just didn't like him. I wasn't into it. It doesn't make up for the millions of other mistakes I made. But in this case, I mean, it's been bad. But I wonder if he can rebound. Like, what in the heck is going on with Dylan Cease? He had another bad start here on Friday. Home run rate, walk rate, through like ERA, like really pretty close to five, if I'm not mistaken, one of the worst in among qualified pitchers. So, ADP is definitely falling for next year.
And he's an interesting guy because this isn't the first time that he's just completely torpedoed a season, but the next season he bounced back as an ace again. with that strikeout upside, he's interesting. I really want to dive into him and see what happened the last time he kind of quote unquote, we'll call it shit the bed. And then came back, you know, because if you can get that 230 strikeout guy where he's going to end up going next year, that could be huge value. You know, I had Zach Gallen bolded, do not draft on my list. I did not like the underlines moving in, but I had a ton of Sandy Alcantara. I thought he was safe coming off the injury. He was on the mound in the last season. I thought the ratios were going to be there. He's never been a big strikeout guy, but he finally looks like he's healthy again, but it took him 4 months to get there.
Yeah, I was just looking, I was just reminded of the Tanner Houck activity there. That was pretty damaging. And this was one of the guys that a lot of us had on the safe list. We're like, oh, he doesn't strike out a lot of guys, but ADP 250-ish, like, hey, what can go wrong?
Yeah, just put him on the team as your number six. You'll be good. Not so much.
Oh, man. By the way, Bradley Blaylock, he had another bad start, but I mean, he's like, I just like reversed by ERA. I think minimum like 40 innings or something. And yeah, in 50 innings, he's got a 9 ERA, and that was before another bad start. Like, that's it's pretty bad. I wonder if he's, hopefully he's not related to Hank Blaylock.
You could be making up that name and I'd believe you.
Number eight. So this is related to the gut feelings article I wrote, and it's talking about all the disappointments we've had with the closers. Of course, Emmanuel Clase on leave. Who knows if he'll pitch again? He produced. He was fine when he was there, but then all of a sudden, abruptly, your second, third round pick is just gone. Obviously, Ryan Helsley, like a 5-ish ERA, massive whip, gets traded to the Mets. It's been a really bad season for him. Ryan Walker, we were like, oh, can't go wrong with Ryan Walker. That's been bad. Devin Williams, this guy, I ended up on a lot of main events. Thankfully, picked up some dude named Daniel Palencia that kind of made up for it. Tanner Scott, Mason Miller getting traded. His ratio has been great, but hard to play him when you have need the saves. And then Josh Hader. I mean, even Josh Hader was amazing, but it's been quite a while, like, well over a month and a half since we've seen him now.
When are we going to learn our lessons as fantasy players about drafting these closers in the first three rounds? It seems like it works less than it does. I mean, 50% of the time, it feels like it busts. It's like we're so poor at identifying who the guy that's just going to dominate for the year is. The only one that probably has worked, and he's not even as dominant as he used to, is Edwin Diaz. Unless I'm missing someone else that was one of those top four rounds guys. It's so much capital and it's so damaging when you miss on that. When it could be a starter or a five category hitter. But we do it every year. Well, we want to get that guy we can write and pin. We don't trust ourselves to find the secondary closer, or pick a guy up on FAB. And, it's a very fine line, because having bad closers coming out of the draft is a good way to blow through your entire FAB budget. But, doing a closer in the first three, four rounds, I'm done doing it. I don't want to say that in Sharpie, but, unless something drastically shows itself to me, I there's no chance of me doing that again.
And exactly. And so the way these things kind of set up is like, then we all do that and then watch, like, then next year it's the odds where it's like four of the five. But again, this has been one of the worst years as far as that's concerned, because a lot of it has been, it's not just a couple of late round guys. It's a lot of them. I mean, Carlos Estevez is the saves leader in the major leagues. He's going close to 180, 200, getting him after like 230 in a lot of OCs. Robert Suarez is kind of the new Kyle Finnegan, but he's better than Finnegan. I will say that Robert Suarez is a really good pitcher. And then, Emilio Pagan out of nowhere, the shocking, how much did we laugh about Pete Fairbanks? Like, everyone and their mothers said Pete Fairbanks will either get hurt or he will get traded. And neither of those things happened. And he's been just fine.
First healthy season of his career. Been good. I mean, Kinley, been whip under one this year. Just these later closers seem to work out. Leading into number seven on our list, the late closer, Aroldis Chapman, top closer in baseball, and he was around roughly 15, 16. He moved up to probably around 12, I think, in the mains towards the end. But he all of a sudden stopped walking guys at the age of 38, throwing 101. It's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, funny how that works. Shout out, first of all, to you, which I wrote about in the article for the Kenley Jansen, because we talked about it in the closer episode. You were dead set on Kenley's going to be great with the Angels. He's a great value, and you were absolutely right on that. And shout out to our bullpen guy, Dan Thompson, who was stoutly on the Chapman train, and I think he's got a main event in the hunt, maybe, you know, C with Chapman there. So, yeah, that's been absolutely excellent. Next here is number six, just the phenomenal seasons of Nick Kurtz and Junior Caminero. And Junior Caminero, I mean, it's not like one of the biggest surprises, whatnot, but I don't know, the Kurtz thing really kind of is. It's funny how 3 months ago it was, oh, you know, Jack Caglione or Nick Kurtz. And the two just, you know, took completely different paths. Granted, Jack had, I think, like a four RBI game in this 20-1 victory on Friday over the Blue Jays, where Scherzer first got dusted, and then Tyler Heineman, the backup or third catcher, comes in and gave up 10 earned runs, something like that, on 13 hits, which is insane. So you got the, you know, the Kurtz thing, and then think back to Caminero. That started our fantasy season, right? Way back in December. He hit that first home run in the Dominican League.
Yep.
44 later.
Amazing. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of narrative this offseason about the ballpark, because Vlad had his breakout year in Dunedin and hasn't had the same year since. You know, the Rays are going back to the Trop next year. What does that look like for Caminero? But that he's a monster. And Nick Kurtz came up first 3 weeks to a month, looked like he was overmatched. He was not very good, and it looked like everybody had blown their fab on the wrong guy. He got hurt, went on the IL, came back, and has literally been top five hitter in baseball. Guy's been incredible. And, you know, I guess my question to you is, where do they go next year? Are they at the wrap of one? Do they settle in two? Where do they deserve to go? But I would believe Kurtz is the first baseman off the board.
Seems like it would be. And I mean, the fact is they're going back to that park next year. And that's just something we looked at taking advantage of before this season. It was a really big deal to us. And the A's have been crushing it. I mean, like all the guys, you know, Bangaliers got 30 bombs. I mean, everybody but Lawrence Butler, unfortunately. But he hit one on Friday. So I'm sure he'll get going at some point next year and be undervalued. But yeah, there is something to that. It's a great park. A guy that doesn't really steal bases. I don't know. I don't think I would be somebody that – I don't think Nick Kurtz is someone I'm going to draft next year. And I don't know. Like, who's to say that, you know, he's going to beat out Matt Olson straight up or Pete Alonso, right? Like, I think these are guys that might be in his range.
Yeah, I was just going to say he feels like peak Matt Olson, right, as far as, like, his profile. No speed. Strikeouts, but just immense power run production in a tiny ballpark next year. Granted, I don't think it matters what ballpark that power plays in. The guy is just a monster.
Yeah, I mean, you're just looking at, just the first baseman in general this year. I mean, yeah, I mean, outside of Bryce Harper gets you a few steals and the crazy Josh Naylor season, you're rarely getting a lot of stolen bases from the first baseman, but. When people are going to start extrapolating and they look and see that, hey, wait, Nick Kurtz played like 30, 40 less games than, you know, Matt Olson and Vlad Guerrero and Pete Alonso, and had basically like, I mean, almost the same runs RBIs as these guys. It's crazy. Like, yeah. So he has literally 190 less plate appearances than Vladimir Guerrero Jr., but he's got 9 more homers, only one less RBI, and hitting about the same as him. It's crazy. And you were right on the BABIP stuff about their averages being outliers this year. So good call there.
Yeah. Those foul balls are not getting caught. So you're going to continue to see that the next couple of years in Sacramento. Caminero's fascinating too, with his opposite field power, and how much will that play at the Trop compared to Steinbrenner Stadium. But I'm glad I got my couple shares of Caminero. I wish I had more. I was kind of between him and Matt Chapman for the most part. And wish I got more Caminero because he's pretty good for a young guy.
Pretty good. Yeah, I mean, we knew he'd be great, but not this level.
Yeah, I don't think anybody could call that. I think one of the biggest outliers, number five on our list, Juan Soto, new New York Met, you know, justifying a brand new contract. Let me have 33 stolen bases. The last 4 years combined, he didn't have 33 stolen bases. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, that 40 homers, 33 steals. I mean, the guy has just been incredible, and I don't have any shares, and I'm very sad.
Yeah, so he was the guy that I was not huge on in the first round, but in the live main event in Vegas, I don't recall exactly what pick I was, but you know, it's a loaded league, and this felt right at the moment. And right now, I'm enjoying it. It's been great because I don't watch a lot of Mets games, but every time I log into the box score, he either has a home run, or a stolen base, or a combo meal. It's incredible. It's exactly what I need. Like, I'm in the hunt in homers, RBIs, and runs. It's like in stolen base, they're all tight. It's all within just like a few runs, and it could be the difference of thousands of dollars. And Juan Soto is one of the guys that can help me get there. And it's just funny. It's funny how you have your preferences. Like, you know, oh, I really want, you know, this guy or that guy. And then you convince yourself, you're like, oh, well, it's a new contract. Can he really repeat what he did? Different ballpark, blah, 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 blah. And then at the end of the day, something like this happens and you just kind of question everything.
Yeah, I know nothing because I had him penciled in for, I think, 8 to 10 steals.
We all did.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's awesome, obviously awesome, but those steals are a game changer. I got nothing.
That's just absolutely incredible. I mean, speaking of incredible, number four, craziest stat lines, biggest surprises here. The guy, I think we literally laughed at this. I think, like, you know, if there was an old takes exposed or like a fantasy receipts for baseball, you and I would get dragged through the mud for our George Springer take. Correct me if I'm wrong. Like, we thought we're like 250 overall. There's so many options you can do rather than a dusty old almost 38-year-old George Springer, who now is on the AL East leading team with almost 30 homers, 100 RBI, I'm sorry, 100 runs, and he's even hitting over 300. It's incredible.
Yeah. Talk about one of the biggest smash value picks there was. Leading off with that profile, you know, it looked like he was kind of dust after last year, but again, probably a guy playing with an injury because the skills just fell off a cliff and it was not age yet. So he has just been producing, just been great week after week, has not fallen off at all this year. And I only have a couple OC shares. I do not have any big shares of him. And it, again, this list makes me a little sad.
Yeah, this is, hey, listen, it's what it kind of intended to do. Well, not intended, but those are the consequences here. Before you drop number three, we were talking about stolen bases, how Juan Soto has 33. Luis Robert Jr. hasn't played in like forever, and he was also at 33 base. I mean, he was on pace for like 55 or something. It's crazy. He's got like 240 less plate appearances than Juan Soto, and he's at 33 stolen bases. Like, it's incredible.
Isn't that how many hits he had before he got hurt too?
Exactly. Hitting 243. Bum.
Yeah, talk about a guy that needs to get out of Chicago and just desperate to get out. He's showing anybody that he wants to be on a contender. Number three on our list, and Trevor Rogers, 107 innings pitched, 100 strikeouts, 1.35 whip, ERA, 0.87 whip. Somehow the Baltimore special GM won this trade, giving away all-star Kyle Stowers. Connor Norby, two starting caliber players for a washed up lefty, and that is now an ace. I mean, the guy just every start shoved again today against the Yankees.
Yeah, it's crazy. And as far as like my shares, the only place I have them is I picked them up in FAB and TGFBI, and I'm in like, you know, fourth place. So, you know, all that Trevor Rogers goodness is unfortunately lost on me. Man, would have been nice on teams that had Bybee and Gallen and really helping with the ratios there.
You're not allowed to bring up yogurt in this podcast, Vlad.
No, my bad. Number two, this is something. Two guys, nobody, I mean, somebody told me like, what was it? I remember I said something, oh, no one could predict the Perdomo thing. And then somebody, a Steve Weimer cheerleader came out and said, Steve did. And I believe that because Steve is, you know, on another level, another planet of genius. So I could totally see that, but I haven't talked to him about it. But I mean, it's just insane what he's doing, man. First round value. He's kind of on the cusp of a top 10 overall player. If he finishes strong here in the last, eight games of the season, he could be at 20 and 20, 100 and 100, and 300. So Geraldo Perdomo, incredible. And then my boy, Hunter Goodman, first round value as well. He's the Rocky hitter we all wanted. Catcher eligible, 30 bombs, 90 RBI, and good with the average.
And Goodman literally was drafted on most teams as just a filler for the stash injured catcher, whether it was Francisco Alvarez or I can name it a couple others. But talk about an accident that just turned into an amazing thing for me in a couple OCs that I had. Francisco Alvarez stashed and pretty easy drop at that point because Goodman was what everything Alvarez was we were hoping for and probably much more.
Yeah, I mean, catcher position really is something. I mean, you're talking about Sal Perez is about to have another 30, maybe 100 season. You know, just same old Sal, just plugging along. And then this is really nice. I mean, this is, you know, I keep saying it, but if there's one thing I really got right this year, it was the late round catchers between Ivan Herrera, Hunter Goodman, Agustin Ramirez, and then this guy, Drake Baldwin, 72 RBIs in about 400 plate appearances.
Yeah, and he hasn't been playing full time up until recently. Just the pedigree, great pedigree coming up and just kind of took that job and just ran with it. Really interested in him moving in the next year as well. The catcher pool is deep as it's ever been. I just put it down on my sheet moving for next year. And it's a good 20 catchers deep as far as really good startable catcher. So it'll be interesting how it shakes out. Nice little segue into number one, right?
And our number one craziest stat line, biggest surprises is
sponsored by Honey Buckets. The big dumper Cal Raleigh, 56 homers and counting, 118 RBIs, and somehow has 14 stolen bases. There's some random high stolen base numbers. And again, this makes me extremely sad because my theory moving into this year was I can draft Cal Raleigh two rounds later in Shea Langeliers and save a little money. Now, Langeliers has been completely worth it. But you want to talk about a game changer going Langeliers compared to Raleigh, what that could have done for some teams. So don't have any shares. And I love Raleigh. Had him last year. But I no way saw this coming. And I don't think anybody can straight face say that they did.
No, nobody did. Not even Cal. Cal is it's in wonderment and all these records and just it's continuing. I mean, he gets to 60 is just going to be absolutely legendary. Yeah. There's our top 10. There it is. Well, top 10.
One more honorable mention to throw in there, who has been very, very quiet, was Pete Crow Armstrong. Him having 29 homers this season is amazing. 90 RBIs, 35 steals, and he has done nothing the last 2 months. Another guy just helped teams. 87 runs, 90 RBIs, 29 homers, 35 steals, batting .246. Those are first round numbers right there, even with the slump. So another guy I don't have, I don't want to keep saying that, but it's a common theme of why I have so many teams in second, third, fourth, rather than first place. If you don't have that breakout guy this year, more than any, it feels more like the fantasy football where you got to have the guys in order to compete. Accumulation, you got to have the perfect blend in order to get up there and compete with those teams that have the PCAs, the Cal Raleighs, the Sotos, the Perdomos, you know, all these guys on this list. If you don't have multiple shares, it's going to be hard to win leagues, but you can compete.
By the way, if I was to ask you a trivia of which outfielder leads the majors in runs batted in, and it's not Judge, who do you think it is?
I do not have an answer to that.
Dude, I didn't either until I looked it up. It's Riley Green.
Yeah.
108 RBI.
You know, that's you would think that number would be a little higher for leading all of the major leagues for outfielders.
Yeah, maybe I'm looking at something in some wrong way, but
no, but I think you're right.
Yeah, yeah, because Kyle Schwarber's a DH, and it's pretty much all, and he's fifth, and he's tied with Caminero. The guys above him are Schwarber, Alonso, Raleigh, and Henio, Gene Suarez. So, yeah. By the way, Tyler Ward, 33-100, with basically really bad batting average, .225, and then Joe Adell. He is on the cusp. If he has a strong week or maybe a good core series, he could be at 40-100.
That's amazing. You know who had a sneaky good year after he was really bad after he got traded was Rafael Devers. I know he was really hot in Boston and got traded and was really bad for the Giants, but you want to talk about a sneaky first baseman next year. I think he's going to be really depressed being on the Giants, and he's going to have first base eligibility. I think he can hit anywhere, and there's going to be value there. I think I'm going to call him this year's Pete Alonso for next year's draft. Early call.
Wow. I like it. I already got Patrick Bailey pegged in my defense only leagues. That's the Giant I'll be drafting.
Sorry, the pitch framing took all of his value away. The ABS.
Yeah, that's right. All right, let's wrap things up here. We're getting close to the end of our season here. Going to take some time off in the off season, but let's talk about some streamers, some fab plays, early look for the weekend. This will be my last fab article of the 2025 season. And we're just looking ahead. Before we jump into these, some advice for people, like what should they be doing? Obviously we're not afraid to drop anybody because it is the last week. But what are some usual things that are worth doing, or what are we used to seeing in a final week of a roto season?
Well, hopefully you have some fab left. You don't need a ton, but you need to have enough fab to make enough moves to maximize your at bats. This last week of the season, as things are clinched, things get weird. And you'll have guys pulled in the fourth inning. You'll have pitchers only pitch two innings. Once Monday locks, your team locks, your pitchers are done. I guess it's Tuesday this week since everybody has Monday off. But carry as many hitters as you can. The last week, my goal is to carry six hitters on my bench, have every position covered, including a third catcher. It's so often that catcher bench for the last week, and you miss out on that bat and you lose a league by one run, or you can win a league by one homer. Everything's so tight. So every run counts, and try to maximize those hitting stats. Having three pitchers on your bench doesn't do you any good, moving into the end of the season. Now you want to make sure you have guys that are not going to get scratched, and you want to have at least one on the bench to fill in a scratch starter. But I would definitely maximize the bench for hitters.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point, specifically about how the way the schedule works out this season. It's usually the case, but there are only six games in the final week of the season. But on Monday, which is the 22nd, there are three games. There will be three baseball games. And so you kind of have an extra day to get more news and perhaps figure out how you're going to set things up. So just remember that, Monday you're going to have the Braves and the Nationals, the Padres and Brewers, and then also the Giants and Cardinals. So if you have basically most of your pitching staff, make your decisions on those players, but keep yourself open a little bit and make sure you jump back in on Tuesday to make all the decisions so that you aren't, you know, you hear some news about somebody that's only going to go three innings or, you know, somebody's clinching or this or that. You know, have those moves ready to make and make sure you do some extra work on Tuesday.
Yep. This is where the really paying attention this last week pays off. The leagues are won and lost. And I know we all have horror stories about how we've lost leagues, but we also have those success stories where we've won leagues. So this is where the money's made.
As far as just the schedules, as far as the best schedule, so the Astros and the Royals get the pleasure of rotating with facing the A's and then the Angels. And then since the A's are at home all week or in their minor league park, that means the Astros and the Royals are visiting the A's there. And then they'll get to play the Angels in Angel Stadium. So it's a pretty good setup for both. The problem for the Royals, they're probably facing three lefties. So if you're trying to do like a Mike Yastrzemski, probably won't work. Sneaky Adam Frazier probably won't be that sneaky. So I don't know. It's not too exciting there with the Royals bats. And of course, don't you dare pick up Jonathan India. He ain't going to do jack shit. Astros
feel better.
Yeah, I feel better. Damn you, India. Nothing personal. Astros. I mean, they've got, you got Zach Cole. You got, Yordan is not coming back. You've got Isaac Paredes. He's back. So just something to keep in mind there for the Astros.
Yeah, and really pay attention to who's scheduled to start on these matchups, because the lefty-righty grid really matters for a lot of these platoon bats. You know, just a random name, if you're facing a lot of lefties for the Royals, Randall Grichuk could all of a sudden propel you to a league win. Mm-hmm. So just pay attention to lefties versus righties and who's pitching and how to maximize those at-bats in this last week.
Yeah, because there could be some magic there. You're looking at the Royals, they're, you know, it's, you know, Caden Dana, who's, you know, a nice prospect. He'll probably be good at some point. Right now he's walking the park and it's going to be hot in LA. And then you got Kikuchi, who's like, now he's mad at management and the Angels were pulling him early in his last start and he sucked. Then you got this Ferris kid, a lefty who's been getting shelled. You know, I mean, it's a good setup for Kansas City. And then they're going to play, you know, Morales, Jeff Springs, and Mason Barnett, the kid, all in that stadium with really bad bullpens. Both those teams with bad bullpens. So, hey, let's look into some Royals.
Yes, sir. Take advantage of that.
Braves are at home, 4-6. That team's been really kind of popping off lately. I saw Kim with a home run today, and he's available, I believe, in 45% of OCs. They're going to get the lefty trio of the Nationals. You got the less than full strength Mackenzie Gore, Brad Year of Our Lord, and then the Andrew Alvarez kid who got shelled today. He'll probably go on Friday. So two lefties there. So you got some you know, righties who mash lefties. You might be able to go with some Braves there.
Yep, and best name in all of baseball, Nacho Alvarez.
Yep. That's right. Nacho Alvarez Jr. Well, I don't know.
I want to meet Senior.
Oh, yeah.
Senior Nacho.
Yeah. The king. The king Nacho. Other hitters, you got some guys. We mentioned Paredes coming back from the IL. Alec Bohm is back from the IL. I think it might render Otto Kemp useless. Although, I don't know. Then maybe they sit some guys this week. Nolan Schanuel got right back into business. I believe he let off and had a good game, but yeah, not, I usually can't expect much from him. Willy Abreu likely back. Make sure if you play him or stream him that the Red Sox get a lot of righties. Right now it looks like they do. Adley Rutschman, not too interested. And then maybe Jonathan Aranda comes back. I know you liked him, but that might be dicey.
Yeah, that's I try to avoid the Rays at this point because you just never know what they're going to do. Guy I picked up this week, Blaine Crim. I didn't know anything about him, but he just hit two home runs. Got another one robbed today, but next week, no Coors. So tread lightly with that one.
The Crim Reaper.
And then Moises Ballesteros on the Cubs, a catcher eligibility, still widely available, has played quite a bit since Tucker's gone out. So I don't see Tucker coming back anytime soon. And side note, Kyle Tucker's getting close to a do not draft for me after these two injury marred seasons, and really how it's been reported and recovered and handled. Very, very frustrating because he's kind of torpedoed a couple of my big teams.
Yeah, I think Kyle Tucker is going to be kind of persona non grata. We'll see where he signs. But I mean, right now, I mean, he's not coming back in the regular season at this point and can't use him next week. Going to be a drop. Really sad to see the Cubs kind of fall apart like that. Will Benson, he's been hitting cleanup out of nowhere. And never know how it is with somebody like Will Benson. And I don't know if I want to go there, but I should let you know that if you need some power, that's a guy that might give it for you. And then hitters, and your boy, Bryce Eldridge, is he even worth it, worth picking up? And is he platooning right now?
He is with platooning with Wilmer Flores, so that's something we got to look at if they're getting righties or lefties. He looks the part, couple just smashes that were outs in Arizona, I don't know. Giants are kind of floundering offensively, so I don't know how much pop he's going to have.
Yeah, that's the one thing we want to be careful of. Like, you know, if you're playing NFBC and you're in the hunt for something, like, I don't think most people are going to do this, but you're not in a keeper league, right? Like, you don't get to carry him over for next season. And unless your corner infield situation is brutal and miserable and you really believe, it's probably not worth doing. On the flip side, the schedule does look decent. They'll be at home all week, which is never a great thing, but it's a guy like with Eldridge's power can hit him anywhere. But they'll likely get their schedule isn't bad. They get the Cardinals, McGreevy, Pallante, and Sonny Gray. Sonny Gray's decent, but you know, 4.5 ERA. And then they'll end things with the Rockies. It's not in Coors, it's in San Francisco. But yeah, Herman Marquez, Kyle Freeland, a lefty, so he won't play there. And then I forgot what the Brown guy's name is. McCade Brown. McCade in the middle.
Yeah. Another made-up name. Yeah. He doesn't exist.
Yeah, McCade in the middle.
Yeah. So another guy I just ran across, Denzer Guzman on the Angels, just got called up, hit a homer today in Coors, playing middle infield for them. Decent minor league profile, some power, some speed. So it'll be interesting with Zach Neto kind of done for the year, how much he gets to play the last week, and if you can kind of catch lightning in a bottle. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter who the name is. If you get the stats the last week, that's what matters. Yeah. So these no-namers get a chance, and they can go have a, you know, 5 RBI week, a homer, stolen base. It can really help.
For sure, for sure. I did kind of did one of those, you know, the Robert Redford, you know, meme or GIF, whatever, to myself. I didn't tweet about it. I think I've grown up, or maybe I'm just, you know, it's not March, so there's nothing to victory lap now. But I wrote about and recommended Christian Moore, like, for the Coors series, and then Christian Moore went to Coors and hit a home run in the first game. So I'm happy about that.
Had a babe.
Yeah, we'll see. Lots of strikeouts with that dude. And again, of course, hangover sometimes with some of these Angels, and the lineup's really kind of a shell of itself. Carter Jensen, by the way, for the Royals, he led off and had a really good game in that 20-1 victory over the Blue Jays today. One thing is, he's utility only, and he's got 5 games or 6 games at catcher. So obviously he's not getting there before next week. So just be careful with the utility. I will say there are a lot of utility guys that you could use this week if you have the slot. If you don't have a Schwarber or an Ohtani, then, you know, there's like a Jock Peterson facing a bunch of righties. There's, you know, Matsuzaka. Is that right?
Did I even Masataka say his name? Yoshida. Masataka. I don't know what you Yoshida. Just said.
Sorry, man.
Gesundheit.
Yeah, my bad. Yeah, so... You got the pitchers. You got the pitchers. We'll end with the pitchers. There's who are some of these guys with the two stars?
Luckily, today? There's no Japanese pitchers, so no. We're okay with that.
No.
Cole Reagan's back, struck out the side his first inning back, back looking healthy. Looks like he's got a 2-start lined up. Giant 1-year wonder Justin Verlander, who will not. Probably not be a Giant next year, has been pitching incredibly well this last 2 months. Ian Seymour, high strikeout upside on the Rays. I thought he had the two start this week, so I got to relook at that, see if he's pitching Sunday or not. But been pretty decent as well. And then Mackenzie Gore was dropped a lot of places as well. And then one of the top pitching prospects in all of baseball. I'll let you take a crack at the name.
Oh, Trey Savage. Yes, I think nailed I do it. Believe that's him. A great debut. And he'll be up again, but it's going to just be a solo start. So he'll make a start. I believe he's pitching this Sunday. So next week, it's just a single against Tampa. I don't think it's one of those things. If you need, I don't know. I don't think it's worth a shot. Like if we had a few weeks left in the season, Savage and Eldridge would be good targets, but otherwise I think kind of pivot in different direction and not make them top bids. And especially if there's somebody like Verlander available who, you know, is a horse and really wants to finish strong. And that last start's going to be in, you know, against the Rockies at home, and you know they're going to let him go. So, you know, I kind of like a start like that more.
Yep. I agree 100%.
Just a couple other names I'll mention. Sal Stewart for the Reds. Although Spencer Steer got mad that he was taking his playing time and has been going on a home run streak. So Spencer Steer, I think, had a couple of bombs today or the other day.
Yep. Been in fuego.
Real hot. And then the A's are at home. I will mention that it's very possible that they're going to face three lefties. So maybe Colby Thomas is in play. He usually hits cleanup against them. But I will temper those expectations because those lefties are Framber Valdez, although he might be already, you know, kind of over it for this season. He's kind of bad juju guy. Noah Cameron, by the way, rookie with under 3 ERA, and then Cole Reagans. So those aren't necessarily the best lefties to go against.
No, they are not. But that ballpark, it's a little warm, and he mashes lefties, so not a bad spec there.
Before we wrap things up, I'm going to just ask you a quick question here. Who do you think is going to be in the World Series, your right now pick?
The 49ers and the Ravens. I mean, the Giants are basically eliminated, so baseball season's almost over for me, Vlad.
Yeah, you don't care.
As long as it's not anybody but the Dodgers. ABD.
You know, yeah, anything but the Dodgers. Well, you know what? I don't think they're going to get there. I think it's going to be the Yankees and the Phillies. Even without Wheeler, I think it kind of feels like the Phillies' year to me.
It kind of feels weirdly enough like the Brewers are going to do something special. That team is so different. Kind of feel like the Giants back in like 2010, 2012, where they didn't have the offense, but they had the pitching and the defense, mm-hmm. And just a timely hitting. I'm calling Brewers Mariners.
That would be, I think, bad for the ratings.
Yeah, terrible for the MLB.
Yeah, and I think we had a show like maybe 3 months ago where we said that would be the combo, and yeah, it'd be funny if that was. I'm with you. If there's a team, if the Dodgers are whatever eliminated in the first series, and as long as it's not to the Padres, I will say if there's any team that I would be rooting for, it would absolutely be the Brewers for many reasons. Like you said, it's just like, kind of like a wholesome team. My boy Yelich is on there. My boy Clint Priester.
The manager's pulling pancakes out of his jacket pocket. I mean, how can you not root for him?
That's as wholesome as it gets, man. And plus, like a lot of our favorite people, like the you know, no BS about them, like salt of the earth people, like Derek Van Riper, Posma, Greg Ambrosius. Like these are Brewers fans. I'm rooting for these guys. Not the Dodgers.
Yeah. In ABD. That's the new slogan. I'm going to change my my screen name to that.
Oh, man. We're not that evil. We're just on the other side of things as a Giants fan. I've learned to harness my anger towards Padres instead of Giants. To me, I no longer dislike the Giants.
Well, because you dislike the relevant team, not the irrelevant team, which the Giants have been.
Hey, man, there was a time. They were close. Just a couple weeks back.
Brought me back in and then ripped my heart out again, Vlad. That's what the Giants do.
Listen, you got Purdy, McCaffrey. You'll be fine.
We'll see. Big game this week.
Yeah, big game. Any things, thoughts to wrap this puppy up?
No, really enjoyed everything this season though, bud. Hope we help people win some money. Good luck, everyone. Yep. Fab this weekend, rest of the season. You know, make good decisions, make that money, and don't blame us.
Yeah, perfect advice. We'll end it there. Wishing everybody lots of luck this weekend. Go win your fab bids. Buy a dollar, because that's probably all you have left. For Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.